this recording studio somewhere far, far away.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience. Thank you very much, and welcome to the last in the present series of the Mary Whitehouse Experience. Now, actually, I'm a bit embarrassed just at the moment because our first joke has failed to arrive.
I just got it here.
Oh, good, good lad. Okay, so here we are with our first joke. Here we go. Don't tell anyone, but we're doing away with all security guards at British military bases. Oh, I think there must be something wrong with our fax machine. Anyway, I'm David Baddiel, and this is Punt and Dennis.
Yes, this is the last in the current series of the Mary Whitehouse Experience, and we won't be back till next year. Now, this means that we won't be on over Christmas. So we've decided that for this reason, we're going to do our Christmas special edition now. Christmas is a time when bookshops fill up with humour books. Wicked Willy, How to Be a Complete Willy, 101 Uses of a Dead Willy, Wicked Willy's Guide to One Joke, and this year, a book which features pictures of famous Liverpudlian comedians posing in baths and basins. Its title, Ken Dodd is in a Sink. Talking of funny people, what would Christmas be without pantomimes? The answer is, better. Pantomimes are crap. Oh, yes, they are. Oh, yes, they are. You sad bunch of people. We've got an audience here tonight who probably think Christmas isn't the same without Billy Smart Circus.
Pantomimes are often criticised for being racist, sexist and so on, but this isn't always true. Under closer examination, Cinderella is a strong satirical attack on the crypto-patriarchal and monarchist societies. Jack and the Beanstalk is a searing indictment of chemical fertilisers.
And Puss in Boots is a story about a cat that wears big boots.
Christmas cards are similarly naff. They usually contain horrible twee poems. The messages contained within are usually gratingly insincere. An honest Christmas card would say,
greetings to your family at this joyous time. Noel to all men with this happy Xmas rhyme. And now I'd like to wish you every Yuletide cheer, even though I couldn't give a toss about you and your obnoxious family for all the rest of the year.
Christmas is the time when we stuff ourselves with food and drink. It's the time when your aunt turns up with her Rover biscuit assortment. A sad come down for a once prestigious car manufacturer. It is a time when people do lots of things that at any other time would get them certified, like dragging a large carnivorous tree into their lounge and trying to wedge it in a bucket with two old bricks and then cover it with small flashing lights with one bulb that isn't connected properly.
Above all, Christmas is always the same. Christmas Day, for most of the great British public, is an orgy of television which invariably looks like this.
6:30 a.m, morning worship, remembering the real meaning of Christmas, with Noel Edmonds and Gordon the Gopher.
Seven a.m., cartoon time. The Destructors, He-Man and the Sexist Stereotypers, the Cheapo Animators, the It Was Better in Our Day. Do you remember that one? What was it called? I think it was the Hair Bear Bunch. Ooh, ooh, Mr. Peebly Nostalgias.
7:30, The Great Escape.
9:30, the Noel Edmonds Up the Top of the Post Office Tower show.
11:30, The Great Escape.
12:30, The Best of Top of the Pops, 1989.
12:31, Tom and Jerry and Noel Edmonds.
12:45, James Bond in Never Say, Oh God, Wasn't This One On Last Year Again.
3 o'clock.
My husband and I rabbit on and on about all the lovely places we've been in the last 12 months on your money.
7 o'clock, the Les Dennis Christmas Special.
7:30, the Russ Abbott Christmas Special.
8 o'clock, Bread Christmas Special.
8:30, Hello Hello Christmas Special.
9 o'clock, the World in Action Christmas Special. Yuletide with the Nicaraguan Death Squads.
10 o'clock.
I read the news. All about how the royals spent their Christmas. Grovel, grovel. Now, please invite me for New Year, you bastards.
And now, the hard experience. Tonight we present the Mary Whitehouse Guide to Being Hard. What does it really mean to be hard? Behind all physical aggression lies latent sexual neurosis. This conclusion came to Sigmund Freud, the author of Jokes and Their Relation to the Unconscious, or as it's now known, Michael Barrymore's Saturday Night Out, during the treatment of one of his lesser-known patients, Vinnie Jones.
January 3rd, 5 to 1. At 1 o'clock, I see Mr. Jones. I suspect he invests too much ego in his masculinity, so I shall taunt him with some light-hearted jibes and see if it is possible to get him at all riled up. Come in, Mr. Jones. Hello?
Are you calling me a buff?
Thereafter, Freud changed his line of questioning to such inquiries as, could you by any chance take your foot off my windpipe? And, is it money you want?
The writers of the present sketch would like to make it absolutely clear to Vinnie Jones and to Vinnie Jones' immediate family and to any of Vinnie Jones' hard mates that they do not wish to suggest that the said Mr. Jones is in any sense not a heterosexual. If it is any recompense, they would like to add that they are of the personal opinion that Vinnie Jones is the hardest man in the football league, especially when he's in the showers. Oh, God. Anyway, the writers of the sketch are Sid Little and Jeffrey Archer.
Hard people have certain accoutrements to go with their hardness. And if you have one of these, but are not hard, you can get into trouble. For example, if you have a big dog...
Oi, mate, my Rottweiler can have your Rottweiler, and I'll have you.
Like, well, Scoob, like, let's get out of here, Scoob.
Let's... Whoop, no fan.
You can also get into trouble with the wrong sort of haircut.
Oi, mate, skinhead! Skinhead!
Oh, dear. Must be more windy than I thought. Well, what are you going to sing for us?
The primary feature of the hard person, however, is that he does not run from not nobody. Of course, this means the British, although crap at sport, are always foremost in hardness.
And here at the Olympic final for the 100 metres, the contestants are on the starting blocks. And they're away, every single one of them, except for the British contestant, who is standing still and shouting, "Come back, you shitters." What a marvellous performance, demonstrating to the watching world that the British do not lose their bottle just because someone's got a pistol. And now, over to the fencing, where the British contestant is not wearing a mask or using a sword, and certainly not putting his hand on the hip.
Of course, the greatest exponent...
And I've just heard that the British pole vaulter has asked for the crash mat to be removed.
Yes. Of course, the greatest exponent of...
And I've just heard again that the British entry in the diving has just bashed his head on the diving board as part of his freestyle routine.
Now, male relationships and the culture of violence have been warped by all this business. The spectre of who is the hardest can poison even the closest friendship.
And now we've just got some time for some late news. Ronnie Barker is a fat git. Did you hear me, Ronnie? I said you're a fat git. Can you hear the Barker sing? No. No wonder you like dressing up in women's clothing.
And it's goodbye from him.
One must be very careful, however, in hard circumstances, not to say or do the wrong thing. For example, if you are in a crowd of West Ham supporters singing, "There's only one Billy Bonds," it's best not to accidentally sing Guantanamera.
However, hardness can never be judged by appearances. For example, Ludwig van Beethoven was responsible for some of the hardest chants heard on the Highbury terraces.
We are the lads. We are the lads. We are the lads. You are the pups. We are the lads. We are the lads. You are the pups. We are the lads. We are the lads. We are the lads. We are the lads. 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 We are the lads.
This is the Tracy Brothers protest experience. Like all protest songs, it's got a harmonica, it's got about three chords, it's got a lot of bitterness, a lot of envy, but hey, it's also got a lot of love, tolerance, compassion and understanding, and it's called Sod Off and Die, Long-Haired Hippie Scum. Through the years, there's been all sorts of scandals. Norwegians had the Vikings, and the Germans had the Vandals. They were folks who liked to fight. They weren't known to be polite. But I'd rather have blokes in horny hats than hairy prats in sandals. Well, if you think that it's dull to spend a wet weekend in Hull, you've never heard a song by Jethro. So, come on, get happy, strangle a hippie today. Let's get hippies stiffing right away. Cause hippies need their faces rearranging. And the times, they are a-changing. Yes, they are. Well, it's 20 years since Woodstock, so it's time that they got wise. They banned the bomb, let's ban the beard and make them realize that they're not stopping wars by listening to the Doors. They might as well be dinosaurs, their brains are the same size. Well, I'd rather dig my grave than chant a lot and never shave. I'd rather be Keith Chegwin's sexual slave. Come on, get happy, strangle a hippie today. Get numbers dropping, get some hippie topping underway. The question is how soon till they get chinned, and the answer is blowing in the wind. Ah. Tremendous radio gag, that one. And so we won't be happy till we see these kids departing. We're protesting, we're suggesting that you get some action starting. And give their memories a shove when they say all you need is love. Say, excuse me, but have you long-haired bastards never heard about money? Gits. And then say, get your head round this man, it's a size 12 Dr. Martin. Well, I'd rather be a waiter, have oral sex with an alligator. I'd rather trap my bollocks in an escalator. Come on, get happy, strangle a hippie today. No more iffing, let's get hippie stiffing right away. Let's put those suckers up against the wall. And it's a hard, rains are gonna fall. Well, come on, get happy, strangle a hippie. Come on, get happy, strangle a hippie. Come on, get sick clapping, strangle a hippie. Come on, get happy, strangle a hippie. Come on, like you mean it. Come on, get happy. I said, if you're down and feeling blue, let me tell you what to do, don't worry. Strangle a hippie. I said, come on, get happy and strangle a hippie today. No more iffing, let's get hippies stiffing right away. Cause hippies need their faces rearranging. And the times, they are a-changing. Yes, they are. Thank you.
This week, term has started again for Britain's students. Now, for new students, this will represent a fundamental change in their lives. So to help them make the transition smoother, we present the Mary White House Higher Education Experience.
Now, at the start of the first term, most students are taken to college by their parents. This is guaranteed to be the only visit your mum and dad will make in 3 years. Not because they're unwilling to come, but because they are simply too embarrassing.
This is true. There's nothing worse than to be spotted by your future friends as your mother wipes some chocolate from your face with the corner of a hanky covered with her own saliva. Or as your father unpacks your Freedom for El Salvador duvet cover from the back of the family Volvo.
These activities are known as the parental contribution. But with any luck, they will be short-lived, and soon your parents will be dispatched, thoroughly convinced that under college rules, they're not allowed to visit you again until graduation.
Now, along with the parental contribution, each student will receive a grant from his local authority in order to support them through college. This may be defined as follows.
A cheque for half the promised amount made out to the wrong person, which will arrive 2 days before the end of term, just in time to bring your overdraft back into three figures without leaving enough change to buy a pint at the college bar.
Even though it's incredibly cheap.
Now, after your parents have left, you can settle into your room, and it is here that you will encounter your first major problem, because most college rooms are considerably smaller than the family Volvo.
Generally, your room will consist of a bed only slightly less narrow than Tory education thinking, and an angle poised lamp that can be manoeuvred to point in any direction as long as it's straight up, because two of the springs are missing.
The lamp will be plugged into the only socket in the room which, on the insertion of a plug, doesn't black out half the Midlands and leave you doing an impression of Gary Gilmore.
But no matter, for far weightier issues await you. The 3 years in higher education is designed to broaden the mind and the horizons, to confront contemporary problems, and to ask profound and far-reaching questions.
Questions like,
which poster should I put up to hide the crappy bit of wall where the last bloke used as a dartboard?
Now, choice of posters is crucial, as it immediately says exactly what kind of person you are. When entering college, it's essential to show that you've thrown off childhood, that you're an independent, non-sexist, non-racist, three-thinking individual. This is why all male students bring the poster of the girl in the tennis kit scratching her bottom.
Finally, a word on friendships. Remember, anyone you befriend in the first week at college is likely to hang around you for the next 3 years. This can be particularly embarrassing if the first time you talk to them, you don't realise that they always wear Millet's jeans, reactor-like glasses, and have several undersized sweatshirts with the dates of the Def Leppard World Tour printed on them. In other words, an engineering student.
Choose your friends carefully. In conversation, give the impression of being a hardened student. For example, if someone knocks on your door one night and you're confronted by this...
Oh, hello. We were just having a dinner party and we've run out of coffee.
You reply,
coffee is the product of peasant exploitation at the hands of a repressive neo-fascist dictatorship in Central and South America. Do you want ground, instant or decaffeinated? And now, the Jack D experience.
A couple of months ago, just as the water shortage was starting, I got a leaflet through the door with tips on how to conserve my water. Tip number one, don't leave your taps running. Never occurred to me, that one. I thought the idea is when you turn on all your taps, then you know when you run out, you know. Tip number two, share your bath water. No. Tip number three. Only flush your toilets when it's absolutely necessary. I don't know about you, but in my house, every time is absolutely necessary. I don't know who it is who goes around flushing your toilets when it's not necessary. Maybe these people should be rounded up at the beginning of summer or something. Was it some kind of perverse hobby I don't know about? You know? Oh, I've done the crossword. I think I'll go and play with a toilet for half an hour. You know, the Queen receives, on average, 3 turds a week in the post. All neatly wrapped up, everything. So there's one way of saving water, I suppose, isn't it? I understand Mark Phillips is getting a divorce. I wonder if he does. A lot of American comedians I've seen up in Edinburgh recently, and they all make jokes about fat people. They make jokes about people who by no fault of their own are overweight. And I don't know about you, but personally, I think it's extremely funny, and I wish I'd thought of it. Because I hate fat people. Especially the ones that think they'll get away with it by being friendly. You know, it's like you get a job in an office on your first day, there's always a fat one tries to make friends with you first, isn't it? Hi, my name is Brian. Oh, Lord, don't think I haven't noticed, all right. It takes about 2.5 minutes to get around to the subject of luncheon vouchers, and, you know, any spare sandwiches, just leave them on my desk, won't you? It's the one with a fridge on it at the back there, like... Actually, recently moved home. I live next door to 2 thin people, and I hate thin people as well, don't you? All into health and fitness, aren't they? I can't stand them. All pleasing themselves for not being fat, right? Well, there's only thin people who are into health and fitness. What is the point, anyway? One of them wears this badge. It says, "You smoke, I choke." So I started smoking again when I saw that. I know a good deal when I see one. I hate people who think it's clever to take drugs, like customs officers. What sort of job is that? All that finger up the arsehole all day long. They think they're so important, don't they? I'll put my cap on, going to work now. Do you ready? Oh, yes, have a nice day at the orifice. Off you go, like that. I watched that series Traffic recently, and explaining that it's only the senior customs officers who get to do that kind of body search. And I was thinking, what kind of incentive scheme is that? I mean, talk about working your way up. That is pathetic. I'm actually terrified of flying. What they say about flying is you're more likely to be killed by a donkey than in an aeroplane crash. Now, I mean, think back, ladies and gentlemen, those donkey rides you went on when you were a kid. The old man that walked up and down the beach, right? Before he set off, did he ever go through an emergency procedure? And all that fuss they make about the black box every time one crashes. I bet every time they find one and play it back, all it says is, "Shit, we're crashing!" That can happen. Nasty things can happen. You're 32,000 feet up in the air, minding your own business, trying to get drunk on duty free, watching a film, which is Jaws, because it always is. Little plastic headphones on, you know, sort of just minding your own business. Next thing you know, the aeroplane ditches in the water. Now, I don't know if you've ever bothered looking at the emergency instructions they give you on aeroplanes. It's all on a sort of plastic coated sheet kept in the pocket in front of you, right by the dynamite, if you're ever looking for it. Right. You pull that out, the emergency instructions, all done in pictures. All simple to understand pictures. So the first one is a DC-10, just sitting on the water. Who drew that? That bastard didn't fly. Why should it float?
Okay, now it's time for the punchline experience. Stop talking. It's time for the punchline experience, and before the show, the studio audience are asked to think of a witty and imaginative punchline for the following joke. What did the SAS man say to the Colombian drugs baron? Last week, this didn't go out, by the way, because all the jokes were too filthy. So, I hope we did a bit better. The best one will win a prize, which this week is a night out with Jimmy Greaves. Second prize is a night out with Ian St. John. Okay. What did the SAS man say to the Colombian drugs baron? "You godless scum, Sunday trading is against the law." Yep, okay. Well, that laugh, I think, said it all. "Your mate, my mate, Marmite." That's from Brigadier John Smythe. Brigadier John Smythe, who works for Saatchi & Saatchi. What did the SAS man say to the Colombian drugs baron? "No thanks, pal. I never touch anything stronger than an embassy." Good one. Bang, 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 bang. "Stop or I'll shoot." "You shouldn't have gone out tonight. There was a Victor Mature film on." More stuff from Saatchi. "The penguins are out tonight." Oh, God, that's why somebody's mad. "Cheers, mate. How much does the British government owe you?" Satire, but not funny. All right, bang, bang, bang wins because Steve says so. So, big hand for Mrs. Bajet Razor. Okay, big hand for her. And now, for the last time, we welcome you to Murder Weekend. A murder mystery story in which our studio audience plays detective. And once again, five strangely unconnected characters are due to spend the weekend at a large country mansion in the small country village of Codicut. To get there, of course, they have to catch the Orient Express.
"The train on platform 4 is for Belgrade, Zagreb, Peking, and all stations to Codicut. Would Mr. Geoffrey Archer come to inquiries where another packet is waiting for him?"
Now, if we watch the ticket office closely, we can see that three of the five strangely unconnected characters boarding the Orient Express tonight are, firstly, Melvin Bragg.
"Hello, can I have a second class return to Nottingham, please?"
"Oh dear, here, have some tunes."
Behind him in the queue is Ian Paisley.
"Can I have a second class return to Nottingham, please?"
Sorry, sir, can you speak up a bit? The glass screen's a bit thick.
"Are you
calling me a poop!
And the Queen, as we have to have her in the last sketch of the series.
Hello. Come on, have a second... No, hold on. Make that first class.
Sod off, you fat cow. But already waiting in compartment M is Mike Yarwood.
Hello. This is my suitcase, and this is me.
And Agatha Christie.
You know, for someone as astute at spotting clues and solving the unsolvable, it remains one of the greatest mysteries of my life, how the late Mr. Christie found out I was an adulteress. And do you know, I've said as much to my son, Linford.
The journey begins. The super sleek modern machine that is the Orient 125 pulses through the countryside at lightning speed.
Time flies by when you're the driver of a train, and I ride on the bush plate there and back again.
Quick, we're running out of Cornwall.
Good afternoon. Welcome aboard the special BR Orient Murder 125. I should like to remind passengers that we shall soon be going into a tunnel, at which point all the lights will go out, to be followed very shortly afterwards by a piercing scream. There you are.
Oh, my God! Nobody's dead! My career is ruined!
Wait a minute. Mike's dead.
Oh, thank God for that. Wait a minute. He's trying to say something. He's trying to tell us who the murderer is.
Betty.
Betty? Betty who?
The dog did a whoopsie in my burrow. I think I said this at the break.
Okay, now a few questions for the audience who once again this week are supplying the clues. Firstly, why are all these people going to Dottingham? Perhaps you can have your suggestions on that, sir.
They were trying to find...
Are you an accountant? Or are you just doing an impression of one? I don't know.
Can't think of anything.
Can't think of anything. Okay, you obviously are an accountant. The mic's pulling for no reason. Hello, sir. Do you know why they were going to Dottingham? They live there. They live there. Oh, God. Yeah, no, they live there. That's very imaginative. Okay, the last one. Last question for the audience. You, sir, what's the most perverted thing you've ever done?
Had a on a 3M.
Can we use that, Bill? Apparently not. Okay, well, the rest of the plot depends on that bit, so... perhaps I can ask you, sir. No, I better not.
Went to the buffet.
Went to the buffet. Right, okay, I think that makes you the primary suspect, because I can't imagine what you got up to with a BLT. I've lost page 36. Right, finally, the passengers in compartment M don't walk away. Turn into their sleeper couchettes for the night.
Ed?
What is it?
I can't get to sleep. Can you sing me a lullaby?
No. All right, then. Go to sleep, my little baby. Go to sleep. My baby Melvin!
The lights go on to reveal that Melvin Bragg has just been shot. But this time, the inspector has finally turned up.
Right, now everybody, tickets, please.
For God's sake, Short Taylor, there's been a crime committed here.
Well, this one has got me completely stumped. There isn't a black man in sight. As far as fair dodging goes, ma'am, you're nicked.
Oh, no. How would I tell my friends? I said I'd only come two stops. But, well, they've been checking, haven't they? £200 fine and a criminal record. It's not exactly a qualification, is it? Which is why I had to kill them all.
Oh dear, after admitting her guilt, the Queen jumps out of the window and makes a run for it. But Shaw Taylor springs into action.
Police have issued a description of the murderer. She is black, male, male, age 22 and wearing a tracksuit top style tracksuit top. And if anyone is found putting up a wanted poster with a picture of a first class stamp on it, they'll have me to answer to. And I'm not a perf.
Listening to The Mary Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Steve Punt, Hugh Dennis, the Tracy Brothers, Sarah Thomas and Jack D. The production assistant was Barbara Keir, the sound was by John Whitehall and the producer was Bill Dare.